Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Welcome to another episode of How I Raised It, the podcast where we interview startup founders who have successfully raised capital. So today with me, I have Charlie Connor, CEO of Heretic. Welcome, Charlie.
Thanks for having me, Nathan.
Glad to have you here. So let's start off with, what is Heretic? What do you guys do, and why'd you start this business?
Awesome. So we are a software solution that helps enterprises and legal teams with the analysis of their contracts, ultimately helping them find the risk, obligation, and opportunities within the contracts that exist within their enterprise today.
Maybe, because that's an interesting, give us a quick use case. A law firm employs this and what?
Yeah, so it even kind of goes to the founding of the company. So at our last startup, we were part of an acquisition. It had to go through the diligence process. So that process is very extensive. And as much as we're talking about founding a company, the weird part of selling it too is it's a really difficult task. So we had to find contracts, agreements, options. And so it was really difficult to work within, as a tech company, these like kind of old databases. They call them virtual data rooms. So a use case that was very applicable and relevant to us was the idea of taking the diligence process and structuring it in a way that you can use models built through machine learning to help analyze the type of contracts and then key sections, so like termination of change of control, obligations if like a change of an event, normally like an equity event. But the idea was to really build it in a way that it could scale. So our bigger vision is that the company culture is like so unique now that if you look at like Slack and other mechanisms that exist, you have more like electronically stored information that you can share. It's about helping present that. So if you run a really tight business, manage opportunity funnel in Salesforce, your tickets in Zendesk, your development cycles in Jira, you've got a lot of great data points that could really help your valuation of the company. So for us, that kind of diligence checklist was not more about just being efficient, but really surfacing key data points that really change the way business is done versus like the, you know, barbarians at the gate in the 80s. Like it's a different world, but sure. Part of like what we're talking about just today is even finding the company is another use case too.
And what's your background? Were you a data scientist or a banker or something else?
Enterprise product guy for a long time. So I got to be very lucky to experience the opportunity of global collaborations. So the idea to kind of go into like what makes a conference call stink, the irony of like the Skype meeting right now, like, was getting to that set. But then it moved to electronic discovery for litigation. So that's what was the kind of tipping point for Heretic was my two co-founders have similar experiences. So one of them, him and I actually worked at the e-discovery platform called Relativity. And then our third was the .NET founders of Microsoft. And so Relativity is built heavily on the Microsoft stack. So between Andy's experience with Azure and Microsoft and Dave's experience with the Relativity platform, we were kind of sitting there joking like, why are we using Relativity? Well, the truth is it's really expensive software, but it was a use case that differs from traditional litigation, and we are now building these kind of solution endpoints in this platform to help provide like a really systematic way to turn a litigation tool to a corporate transaction tool. And the idea is to use that as a go-to-market strategy for things like virtual data rooms or even cool applications like Box or Google Drive, where it's the structured data kind of problem, but it applied to like text documents that are normally kind of neglected until you have a change of like in a major event.
Okay, interesting. There's a lot to that, which I'll have to wrap my brain around. So let's talk about fundraising. So how much have you raised, and what's the pie chart look like in terms of venture, angel, friends and family, other? Yeah.
Totally. So we just completed kind of like the second tranche of our Series Seed. So it was $2.4 million. It's a little bit of a hodgepodge. We've got two awesome angel investors that remain silent but very engaged. then two local Chicago VCs, Corazon Capital and Chicago Ventures. And then we actually have a strategic investment, which is Relativity. So it was some huge learning lessons of like what scares investors about a strategic investment, what the angels can do for you and what they can't, and then how to leverage the VCs to help you through that kind of coaching experience. So for us, the two tranches was really helpful because we were able to engage and then know that we were working with them towards that second tranche, so like the second amount of the fund. But it's a mix of that, but we try to bootstrap it in the beginning of trying not to get to the friends and family, but to the data sciences and other parts, it's much more different than traditional kind of SaaS where you do need more capital to get access to data sets, run more infrastructure more consistently. So we realized that the kind of bootstrapping wasn't a capability and then went the route of like looking at the Chicago investment community.
So the first tranche was that angels, or were all these parties in both tranches?
It was all these parties with the pro rata rights to maintain the amount for the second tranche. So the idea was to seed the business, go out, spend more time with clients to understand what that second amount would look like. So they were. It was really a humbling experience because we were a very small investment for what is traditional, especially in Chicago, because of the B2B more, I think, like established approach here. So they were giving us a lot of help to understand what was really needed for that second tranche. So it was really kind of that first small seed, and then all of them had those rights for the second round.
How much was the first tranche then? So
600,000.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Interesting. And I have so many questions, but we'll start up. How and you bootstrapped it for how long before that? Or if you're willing to share, how much did you put in of your own money? People always love to know, like.
It's funny because like that was a hard question we'd get. And it was like really interesting because I didn't know what the answer they wanted was. Mm-hmm. So the answer was zero, but we had no income. And then any revenue went straight to the business. So what we were doing is we got to do some cool like side projects. So the CEO, Andrew Stasia, he knew Dave and I really well, and he's been a huge mentor of ours. So he was like, hey, I like the Slack Enterprise Grid. We got to do like, there's like e-discovery integration. So it's so cool working with like the Slack team, like, you know, under the radar before they launched Enterprise Grid. But all that revenue went straight back into the business. So, and then I was doing side consulting from like a product manager perspective at Dave and Andy too. So it was like tough because when they asked that question, we were like, what do you want to hear? Like, and yeah. The truth was, is that the lesson learned there is to quantify that amount. Cause that was real money. Like we had, you know, zero income per se, but it equated to about like $250,000 from like the revenue opportunities that we were doing. So like this project would be 80,000. My salary was 60,000 from consulting. So like what we should have done is that would have, I think, helped the investors one, understand potentially like what other capital we needed, but also would show a lot more effort. Because our first answer was nothing, but that wasn't really it. It just was shifting the money towards a different way.
Yeah.
But it was also like a good experience. Like we really got to be tight and intelligent how each dollar was spent. So we'd go see a client. We'd be like, what are the other three we could see? Or we'd go to a trade show. Let's share one badge. You know, so it just was like that scrappiness that we were glad to go through.
Oh, I think it's good behavior. I love cheap startups and scrappy startups. Well, one answer is like, how long did you go without a salary? I mean, that's always something people are curious about too. It's like,
eight months.
And it was like, okay.
Yeah, and it was super embarrassing having asked my wife for like an allowance each time. But you know, I was also lucky there, and that's I think a learned lesson too is like how much that friends and family can help without even the financial raise too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm lucky. My wife has her own business and it's smoothed out things where in the early days, especially. So a strategic, two VCs and how many angels?
Two angels.
So raising that round, were you, kind of running three parallel processes where you're talking to angels and VCs and strategics, or was it all just kind of let's talk to everyone? And what was your approach to raising money? Let me go.
Yeah, so we wanted to bootstrap, and the hard part was our first kind of backer was like the platform. So they're like, we're all in, guys, but he is like one of these rare things that exist today where he's like the sole founder and like the sole investor. So like he actually just finally took money from the Iconic Capital Group, which is like,
Sam's. Who are you referring to? That's
okay. Sorry. The CEO of Relativity's platform. So like kind of the platform that we're building off of at the start. Okay. So it was, you know, he founded this thing himself to like, you know, a $1 billion valuation plus. So for him, he's like, oh, just go, guys. And we're like, well, you know, data science is different than software. It just was like an interesting thing where he did something that I think is very unique, and it was really hard for us to replicate. So what we did is we went out to raise money. The hard part in Chicago is they're much more show me what you can do first before we want to get engaged. So I look at it where I think Chicago is a great B2B like place to raise, and I think that it's a lot of the unsexy scenarios of like SMS Assist and the Relativity litigation tool. But it's you really have to have traction. Like a lot of people wouldn't give us that kind of guys like let me see what you can do first. And we were trying our best, but it even made it more compounded because we were the first to build off this platform. So it was really difficult to like sit in these pitches and they'd be like, wait, what is Relativity? Why are they building that? But we knew that Andrew would like talk to them or speak with them of like what he was trying to do, which is like he saw a huge opportunity for an unstructured data platform, but he had to do one use case really well. So like ironically, like just this weekend, an article came out that they're like predicting them to be the next Salesforce.com, but to pitch that in the early stage was like really difficult. We had to eventually reach out to an angel from our last startup, and he's like, oh man, you're bringing the game back together? Let's do this. And I was like, God, we should have called you first. But it just was like, we also wanted to try. So it was like learning about on the investor decks to number each slide, to not too much of certain inks. So it was like these pain points I'm glad we went through, but it's those parallel processes you said, like you still got to run your business. You still got to meet with clients while you're doing that. So it was tough. It was a good learning opportunity, but I will not repeat some of those same mistakes.
Okay. That's interesting. So you had to pitch both the Relativity platform and your own business, kind of pitching two things at once.
Yeah, it was. And it was, there's a lot of hindsight. I think what we could have done better. But it was something that like we had such conviction to that we, for the right partners, were like, okay, guys, like let us, and it's a small tech community too. So they're like, we'll call Andrew ourselves, and we're like, great, give him a call. So it was one of those things that I think helped one validate. But then when they would speak to him, they're like, okay, we're in. And it was like that consistent excitement. So for us, while it was super difficult, when we got in front of them, it being a smaller community, they're like, why isn't he doing this? And he'd be able to explain his vision of really being an engineering CEO, wanting that platform. But it's a hard thing to sell, which is what maybe the opportunity could have been more of having something more referenceable in the pitch deck or something that he would help validate. So it could have saved us like the anxiety of like a weird, awkward pitch in the middle of something where, lesson learned, like bringing the answers to the questions ahead of time was something that we could have clearly got ahead of.
So you got Andrew, CEO of Relativity, as your first sort of sponsor. And then did that lead to meetings with the VCs or is that a totally separate thing? Or how did you?
Well, no, we totally tried to pitch the VCs. But I guess like a good point too is we started participating in these venture pitches. Uh-huh. So machine learning is like the biggest buzz. And what we were saying to ourselves too is, man, we have to pitch to people that don't know this world, right? Like this litigation discovery world. So we're like, let's just do these pitches. We got really lucky that there was one hosted by the University of Chicago that was huge. And we got to be able to pitch that. But then the VCs in the room started meeting with us. What was happening, there was the struggle. So, man, we were really struggling to get the VCs to like understand the market opportunity. They wanted more traction, or they were scared about a strategic investor. What we did is, and I think for anyone, I would definitely suggest this too, is understanding the value of you as an individual team. And people say that, but you know, we've had a track record of selling a previous startup to get acquired. We have enterprise SaaS experience, international experience. So like it was a missed opportunity, I think. But when our angel, we re-engaged him for like counsel and advice, like, hey, would you mind helping us? He was able to tell our story better. And the hindsight was like, you know, half of, or even more, especially for an early founder, it is the team, right? So, and you read it, it's just, it's like a kind of the interview, like how much do you brag about yourselves? And the answer is a lot. It's a lot, because if you're pre-revenue or pre-product, you know, they're investing in the team, not you, not your kind of product at the time. It was just, again, one of those things where we've had a lot of startup experience, but the pure from scratch fundraising was brand new for us.
Okay, interesting. Any other tips for anyone who's watching this in Chicago of how to crack the investment community in Chicago? The University of Chicago pitch competition sounds like one avenue. Other tips for cracking the Chicago scene?
I think the in general too, I think that there's a total respect of somebody trying to learn. So I think if you, like, there's a lot of great mentor hours, opportunities. The incubator is at 1871. It's a non-for-profit. So they really care. So what I've found is, like, we would, like, walk into, like a mentor, and he'd be like, okay, guys, what do you do? And we'd, like, totally screw up the elevator pitch. And he's like, okay, guys, let's start over. And you would, like, it is a safer environment, but, like, when you'd come back and you'd have that pitch better, or you'd take their advice on, you know, what a convertible note would be versus like a priced equity round, and you clearly like took that feedback, you were getting these opportunities where like, hey, let me introduce you to so-and-so, or this isn't necessarily my type of investment. So it would give you those scenarios where they were opening themselves up, but if you would come back and clearly show you listened and you want to learn, I think that is always something, especially in Chicago, where it is difficult because they want this precedent of you know, established revenue or product, to show that you're willing to take the lessons that the teachings are going to give you and apply them is a great sign to a potential investor that you're worth investing in.
Did you have any traction or really was investing in the team and vision and so on and so forth?
We had some traction, but it was difficult to quantify. So e-discovery was kind of driven by technology. So someone says, I got to get the emails from Enron. This is like kind of the most famous answer of like, you could literally see them like regulate the equities. But we had to like kind of sell the best deal makers why technology was worthy to them. So it was a little bit more of like these concept sells. So we had great traction, but to quantify that to scalable from an investor standpoint was where the struggle was, which is why that platform opportunity became the crutch of the pitch, which is where we needed that help from the angel and kind of some lessons learned on our end.
Okay. With the strategic investor, share as much as you can, but you know, there's always that risk. Some people are worried that the strategic bear hug, where your only exit opportunity is to that strategic investor. Did you encounter any onerous terms when you were doing that deal?
Yeah, I had no idea that was such a thing. Like, I had no idea, and it makes sense. Like, if I'm gonna invest in you, I want the largest amount of exit opportunities as well. I miscalculated, but my other co-founder, Andy, is really good at this stuff. So he knew right away. He's like, guys, like, we cannot agree to like rights of first refusal or other stuff too. And it was their first time being a venture. You know, we were their first investment. And it's their company too. So like, there's things like, I don't blame them, right? Like, hey, we're going to do this. And so it was very cordial. Like, it just was like trying to help get proof points. So I'd say, like, I found this awesome article where, like, Jason Lemkin was interviewing, like, the VP of development at Salesforce. And he talked about, like, their methodology of, like, first right of notification. So it's small things like that, too, that I think that there's just a lot going on. So especially for, like, a strategic investment, helping them understand how other companies do it or set those precedents, like, was great because, like, they're also running their business too, and they're really, really supportive, but, you know, they're also trying to protect their IP. So we just had to help kind of explain that, like, we need additional capital. Like, we also need people that have, like, mentored startups. And so when we were able to kind of lay that out, I was like, oh, cool, makes total sense. But I had no idea that it would have been such a like obstacle to overcome. Like I thought it'd actually be like a badge of honor, and it was just kind of some repositioning and some mentorship to get through it.
Yeah, interesting. Do you think you'll raise two questions. Do you think you'll raise more money? And if you have plans to, will it be in Chicago? Will you stay tapping the Chicago funding market, or will you need to go Silicon Valley or New York, or, you know, what do you think?
I mean, I definitely don't have any like biases. Like we got connected. We just weren't big enough for like the West Coast. I think the East Coast and international is interesting because this area of law is like this huge inflection point where you got market factors, you got government regulation, and there's like a real desire for the firms to innovate. So what we've been trying to do is focus on not only what can you from a capital perspective, but like, could we get access to like a law firm's data? Or like one of our early clients has their own data scientist in their law firm, Reed Smith. And that's like a huge opportunity where we have an expert in like data analytics as well as like the law firm experts. So, you know, I think for us, like our hope is to actually like turn profitable by design. Building off the platform gives us a lot of chance to get more towards like the value driven features. But I think if we were to raise again, we would look at where do we want to go next and who's the ones to get us there, which could be Silicon Valley or East Coast money. We've enjoyed the idea of it being a company with control. So it would be something that we would really work closely with our investors and this is the whole company as a whole to see where we should take it.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, insight into negotiations, especially like with the VC firms in Chicago. What was that like? Was it focused on valuation or terms or both?
Yeah, it was both in like competition too. So they'd ask like really tough questions. And one of our investors, Corazon Capital, like asked really tough questions that I was attracted to. I was like, wait, how did you see around that corner? We didn't. And then it came into a little bit of, who could get the next lead round because we wanted so-and-so on our board. So that was like weird things I wasn't used to. And there was also questions that I didn't really ask. So like I've been totally shocked. Like Chicago Ventures has this like Slack group and a community. And like if you post a LinkedIn job, they'll like they had a community platform like send you these candidates they have. And those are things that like in hindsight could have been ways like how do you help us hire? How do you help mentor new employees, what options are. And so like Slack is like a really interesting option because what's so cool about it is I could start a private chat with another founder or there could be a channel on like, what books are you reading? So it just was like those small things to understand like what value that we could get outside of the capital was things that like we didn't ask. And then from a negotiation standpoint, we just were lucky that they also knew each other. So I think the other part too is that you will see commonalities of what VCs maybe invest together. And I think that could be something that you could strategize on if you were really targeting a particular VC, who do they commonly raise with or have worked with in the past that could help alleviate those types of like more conflicts of interest.
Did you have a competitive deal? Were there other VC firms that were interested or, you know, did you have your choice of multiple VC firms?
I would say like it was I'm very grateful for the our VCs were great. So I felt like it was like where if you're really good at your like your product's good or your team's supportive that you don't take those competitor calls. So we weren't really looking like we really felt like wow this is great like we've got the right mix of strategic angels and VCs. What has shocked me is the amount of people after you raised reaching out to you. Like I would really think that that's interesting, but like you know, it's always I think important to kind of listen. So there's been some really cool ones that have reached out that
investors, I like other investors that reach out. Okay.
Yeah. So like, which is weird because I thought they'd be like, oh man, you just raised. You're not raising for a while. So I don't know if they're like looking at it's a series seed and like eventually may go to A, but it's one of those things that it's just the right balance. And then I try to be overly transparent. So I'll say like, hey, so-and-so reached out. What do you guys think? Just so they don't feel like that we are playing those games, all that competitiveness, because I've been very grateful for how we got here so far.
Do you take meetings with the cold or, you know, whatever, the inbound stuff, or are you putting them off until later?
like 99% of putting them off. There's some that are very, when it's not the canned email, and it's somebody who's like, or they've been in our space, or somebody that's kind of a known thought leader, it's hard not to say yes. But like, we just find ourselves with good people. They're like, are you sure you're not being catfished? So we're trying to make sure like we're sending the right stuff. But it, you know, for me, anything that could accelerate our opportunities are important to be aware of. So there have been some that have been really cool within machine learning or law that like maybe we can keep talking to and be there. But it's just really more kind of look at what is unique about you that would make it worthwhile to at least have a phone call with. Yeah. That's what we've been trying to do.
This is great. Okay. Well, you've covered some of this already, but I'll ask it anyway. What, you know, one piece of advice would you give yourself if you were go back in time, do it all over again? Or, you know, what general advice would you have for founders doing this?
I think if you're lucky enough to have co-founders, I think that a lesson we learned is we were trying to do a lot by committee. And I think that if your founders as a group, like, so we've previously worked together, we should have just divided and conquered, where someone should have been like, okay, you figure out the cap table, you figure out the documents, you figure out the deal, like the docs rooms, like, and it would have been something that we were doing stuff together, we were learning, but like the truth is there's just too much to do. And no matter what you tell yourself, it's always going to be a huge amount of your time. So I think like what I would have just said is like, you know, Andy and Dave really well, like, give yourselves jobs and then meet back in like a checkpoints through. And I think that would have been, that's how we handled the second round. And it was like way more efficient for us than it was trying to do everything together.
Yeah, go into that a little more. So you would kind of divide up.
Yeah. So ownership, like there's of like
investor leads. Is that right?
Yeah. So like, yeah, getting like your like Delaware tax exemptions done, or like a bunch of those docs that become important to do. Like we were trying to like, so we wanted to learn too, where there's just opportunities like, okay, you set up like, I think it's called Carta now, but like eShares, and you set up like the doc room where we're going to put all of the documentation. You work with the lawyer on the term sheet. And kind of assigning roles, if you're fortunate to have co-founders, I think would have been a smarter move because it just was like, even though you all want to learn, like there's so much to be done in addition just to running your business. Yeah. That like leverage that multiple kind of like, you know, people you have to the right way.
Interesting. Okay. Last question. One I forgot is, you know, maybe for that first tranche, how long did it take you to raise that, months or weeks, whatever? And how many total investors do you think you talked to during that time? Kind of the top of the
Yeah. it took us 2 months, which is still really lucky. But it took about 10 meetings. And from our perspective in Chicago, that's a lot of them. So what we were really trying to do that. What we got lucky about halfway is when our angel got involved. So he really helped guide us to people that I've invested in companies like ours or interested in this space, where we were sometimes meeting and you'd hear, you guys are kind of in this space, but kind of in this other, I don't know where you fit. And that was the hard part, is like, we'd go in these pitches and then it's like, oh no, it's not my group. And we're like, okay, great. Then what's the next one? And it was tough, because then you didn't know if you were getting tagged along or you're actually getting set. And someone's like, when they dismiss you quickly, like that's also a benefit too. So like sometimes what's looking at like a no is really, you should be thankful for, and just ask why the reason was, and if it was something you could have improved. But I think we would have, those numbers would have increased if we weren't able to reach our angel.
Yeah. So how many total investors did you
talk to? Sorry, 10. Yeah, so we met with 10, which is 10. Like a lot. Yeah, which is a lot in kind of the Chicago space.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so we were trying to really keep it tight where, you know, were they local in the city, so we could really have that opportunity to meet them face to face. So we were kind of like choosing like these kind of areas in particular, but we were definitely thinking like, do we expand out?
Yeah.
You know, where do we go next from that standpoint?
Good stuff. All right. Well, any big goals for 2018?
Yeah, getting to that profitability. But also I think for us, the ability to kind of separate like an awesome product and a great team. So like we're really trying to have those two stories told. And it's one of those things now that we've kind of got the opportunity, we really want to execute, but kind of share the personality of the team. So we're really excited about getting those two things out there, where we love to co-create, but we also want to really get that opportunity for people to see a really strong product.
What's the name? Where's the name from? I think of Heretic. I think of a multiplayer kind of like Doom game from 90s or I don't know, maybe late.
Yes. Like the flame actually is like has a K in it. So instead of ending with the C, it's those that refuse to conform to the standards of conduct by seeking knowledge. So the idea is like to change the legal space, you almost have to be a rule breaker. But we wanted like the smart rule breakers to do it. Because we're looking at like outliers and like all these things, because we basically really want to help people find what they need quickly. But like when we started talking to people, they're like, oh man, this is going to be a big fight to get this thing through the team. And it was like we kind of needed those rebels, but we wanted to add in like the knowledge part where they're like well-informed rebels. So that's where like the thing came. But we went to New York to this like trade show. We were so scared because we were like, is everyone going to be like, you heretics? Or like, you know, so it was like, we were almost just so relieved that it didn't become a huge part of the meeting, just the name, because we were like super nervous about it. So yeah, it's been cool. And it's been like a fun thing too that we've been able to play in on like load screens as well as other ways of like our users are heretics. So it's been fun to kind of have it evolve where that's another thing. Like, man, choosing your name is way harder than anyone ever.
Yeah.
Like, because you're like thinking the best name and you're like, oh my gosh, the domain's like owned, or like it's just is so funny, like where I look back now and I'm like, how did you come, like that was a really good name, how did you do that, you know? So
yeah, no, it's a cool name, it's memorable. All right, well, and it's just heretic.com, right, if anyone wants to check it out?
Yes, with sir, a K. yeah.
Great. All right, well, Charlie, thank you for your time. I wish you the best of luck for you know, continued success with Heretic, and appreciate it. Have a good rest of your week.
Thank you, Nathan. Really appreciate the opportunity.
Okay.